listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from United States Postal Service, dedicated to putting reliability at the core of USPS Ground Advantage to help businesses operate smoothly. More at usps.com/groundadvantage. We're live. We're local. We are Kansas Public Radio. From the Souvenir d'Amérique, or American Souvenirs, by Henri Vuitton. Some variations on Yankee Doodle with the Tchaikovsky Chamber Orchestra, led by Lazar Gossman on Kansas Public Radio. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Jeff Watson. Classical music continues as we enter the afternoon time. Coming up in this noon hour, we'll have fun with the London Symphony Orchestra, bringing us Aram Khachaturian's Masquerade Suite. We'll have a time as well for a little bit of lute duet music by Thomas Robinson, all in just a little bit here on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being on hand. Here's the London Symphony right now with a concerto written by Max Bruch in the year 1911. This is a concerto he wrote for viola with a little bit of extra heft to it. It's actually a double concerto for viola as well as clarinet. Bruch wrote this in 1911 for the great viola virtuoso Willie Hess, and apparently his own son, a clarinet soloist, Max Felix Bruch. Today, we'll hear the London Symphony and clarinetist Thea King, Nobuko Imai playing viola, Alan Francis leading the whole performance here on Kansas Public Radio. From composer Max Bruch, his double concerto for viola and clarinet, written in 1911, played today by the London Symphony Orchestra, clarinetist Thea King, and violist Nobuko Imai, all under conductor Alan Francis, here on Kansas Public Radio. 12:33 now, and in just a few minutes we'll have back the London Symphony Orchestra for Aram Khachaturian's Masquerade Suite. Quite a bit of fun still to come in our noon hour of the classics here on KPR. Support for classical music comes from the University of Kansas, where experts connect across a constellation of campuses and disciplines, seeking breakthroughs to address complex health, safety, and economic challenges affecting people everywhere. Details at kansas.ku.edu. Right now on the KU campus, some light rain and about 77 degrees. We're inching our way today to a high of about 85. With a 40% chance of continued showers throughout the afternoon. Tonight looks like showers are likely, 70% chance of rain and thunderstorms possible as well late tonight and in the overnight hours. We'll have a low of 72, 30% chance of showers for tomorrow, with highs around 89. Next on KPR, we go way back to the time of the Renaissance. We have some music here now for you for lutes by Thomas Robinson, an English Renaissance composer who lived mainly in the 1500s. Not very much is known about his life other than the fact that in the late 1500s he served as a personal teacher to the Danish royal family at Elsinore in Denmark. What we'll listen to is a lute duet suite played by lutenists Paul Odette and Jakob Lindberg on Kansas Public Radio. Lutenists Paul Odette and Jakob Lindberg, together in a lute duet suite by the Renaissance English composer Thomas Robinson on Kansas Public Radio. The time is 12:42. We're live, we're local. KPR is 91.5 Lawrence, 90.3 Chanute, and online at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday afternoon. Join us for the 780 Songwriters Circle, presented by the Lawrence Public Library, KPR, and the Lawrence Music Alliance, hosted by Chris Mola, featuring local artists Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids, Heidi Gluck, and Chris Crissy of the Appleseed Cast, all at the Lawrence Public Library, September 9th at 6 p.m. Ready to welcome back the London Symphony and conductor Stanley Black and the masterpiece of composer Aram Khachaturian with his suite of incidental music from the play Masquerade, next on KPR. conductor Stanley Black leading the London Symphony Orchestra in the Masquerade Suite by Aram Khachaturian from 1941, here on Kansas Public Radio. 1 p.m. now, and stay tuned for NPR News in just a moment. Classics continue in the next hour, where, for the most part, we'll spend our time with the Philadelphia Orchestra, enjoying Antonin Dvorak's Symphony No. 8, plus music by Rossini and Rachmaninoff, all just ahead, here on a Thursday afternoon on Kansas Public Radio. From the University of Kansas, we are KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, KANQ Chanute, K210 CRN Atchison, and K258BT in Manhattan. We're always online at kansaspublicradio.org, or tell your smart speakers to play Kansas Public Radio.
2.5%. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Progressive Insurance, where drivers can bundle and customize their home and auto insurance in one place with the goal of protecting what matters most. Coverage options at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. We're live, we're local. We are Kansas Public Radio. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, led by Leonard Slatkin, and a little bit of music by Sergei Rachmaninoff, a short scherzo for orchestra in F major, here on KBR. I'm Jeff Watson. There's some more classical music for you Thursday afternoon just ahead. The Philadelphia Orchestra gives us our main performance for the hour. In just a few minutes, we'll catch Symphony No. 8, music by Antonin Dvorak, still to come, here on Kansas Public Radio. Thanks for stopping by. Support for classical music on KPR comes from Kansas State University, where researchers develop science-based solutions to conserve and manage water resources. More information at k-state.edu. We're joined now by the Carmina String Trio and flutist Peter Lucas Graf for some chamber music by Rossini in the days before he had achieved operatic fame. Here's String Sonata No. 1 in G, next on KPR. Chamber music from Rossini, String Sonata No. 1 in G major, performed by the Carmina String Trio, along with flutist Peter Lucas Graf, on Kansas Public Radio. 1:22 is the time. And at the top of the hour, we'll have our next NPR News update. We've got classical music to enjoy till 3 p.m. From the University of Kansas, Kansas Public Radio is 91.5 Lawrence, 99.5 Manhattan, and always online, of course, at kansaspublicradio.org. Support for classical music comes from the Kansas State Fiddling and Picking Championships, presenting Dom Flemons of the Carolina Chocolate Drops in Lawrence's South Park on Sunday, August 23rd. More information at fidpick.org. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on the Resource Center for Independent Living, working with individuals, families, and communities to promote independent living and individual choice to persons with disabilities. More information at rcilinc.org. Next up is the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted in this instance by Wolfgang Sawallisch, and music by Antonin Dvorak. We have one of his marvelous symphonies for you now. This one dates from the year 1880. And it's something that he composed on the occasion of his election to the Bohemian Academy of Science, Literature, and Arts. Symphony No. 8 in G major. Cheery and lyrical piece that draws its inspiration from the Bohemian folk music that made Dvorak so popular. Symphony No. 8 in G, next on Kansas Public Radio. Symphony No. 8 in G major by Antonin Dvorak, played by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Wolfgang Sawallisch on KPR, Kansas Public Radio. Almost 2 p.m. now, and stay tuned next for NPR News, followed by the next hour of classical music, and we've got another wonderful symphony in store for us Howard Hanson's Romantic Symphony, his second with the Eastman Rochester Symphony Orchestra, along with work by Mendelssohn, Liszt, and much more still to come. Classics continue on a Thursday afternoon. Here on the KU campus, 78 degrees, warming up to 85 with mostly cloudy skies, 40% chance of showers. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio. All things considered today, from 3 to 7 p.m. at your place to find NPR News. We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, KANQ Chanute, and online at kansaspublicradio.org.
That story. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from DuckDuckGo, a private search engine and browser. DuckDuckGo believes AI should be optional and private. Now at Duck.ai, users can chat privately with AI. Learn more at Duck.ai. We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio. Camerata Transylvania, getting things started in this 2 p.m. hour with Prelude No. 5 for Strings by French composer Jean Francais on Kansas Public Radio. Good afternoon, welcome once more. I'm Jeff Watson, back with another hour of classical music for your Thursday afternoon. An hour that brings us Mendelssohn's music for cello and piano, concert variations, as well as the Eastman Rochester Symphony Orchestra. They've got a wonderful performance of Howard Hanson's Romantic Symphony, Symphony No. 2, on the way, here on KPR. Support for classical music on KPR comes from Audio Reader, an audio information service for anyone who has difficulty reading standard print. Grateful for the generosity of all donors who help me at annual programming needs. Donation information at reader.ku.edu. Next up is the Slovak Philharmonic and conductor Andras Lenard with one of the 12 symphonic poems written by Franz Liszt. This one, his fourth symphonic poem from 1853, like all the rest, were all about musical depictions of people of creative genius, heroism, or legend. In this case, Greek legend. We'll hear the symphonic poem Orpheus next on Kansas Public Radio. Composed in 1853, Franz Liszt's symphonic poem No. 4, Orpheus, performed by the Slovak Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Andras Lenard on Kansas Public Radio. 2:19 now, and we're about 10 minutes away from the Eastman Rochester Symphony Orchestra and their rendition of Howard Hanson's Romantic Symphony, Symphony No. 2. Still to come here on a Thursday afternoon. Support for classical music on KPR comes from KTWU Channel 11, local public television, where arts, entertainment, educational, and informational programming is offered daily. Details on the web at ktwu.org. KTWU Channel 11, local public television. On the KU campus right now, 78 degrees. Warming up about to the mid-80s for this afternoon. 30% chance of showers and storms. Tonight, an even better chance of showers. 70% chance of rain late tonight, with thunderstorms possible late tonight and overnight. A low of 72. Tomorrow, 30% chance of rain, with cloudy skies. Temperatures near 88. Next on KPR is a little chamber music from Felix Mendelssohn, concert variations for cello and piano, with cellist Misha Maisky and at piano Sergio Daniel Tiempo, here on KPR. Concert variations for cello and piano, written by Felix Mendelssohn, performed by cellist Misha Maisky, and at piano Sergio Daniel Tiempo, here on Kansas Public Radio. Almost 2:30, and at 3 p.m., it'll be time for All Things Considered from NPR News. Tonight at 7 p.m., we bring you Classics Live. Tonight, it's the Sunflower Music Festival and the second concert of chamber music from 2025. With the Debussy Sonata for Flute, Viola, and Harp, the incredible string quartet by Samuel Barber, containing the famous Adagio for strings, as well as the clarinet quintet by Brahms. Classics Live. That is tonight at 7 p.m. with an hour of classical music from 8 to 9. All ahead this evening on KPR. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on the Resource Center for Independent Living, providing peer counseling, advocacy, and independent living skills training to promote individual choice to persons with disabilities. Details at rcilinc.org. And we arrive now at our performance by the Eastman Rochester Symphony Orchestra. Howard Henson is conductor in this recording, as well as the author of the music we'll hear, perhaps the most famous thing he ever wrote, in 1930 for the 30th anniversary of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. It's Symphony No. 2, Henson's Romantic Symphony, next on KPR. Manhattan Strings with music of Shostakovich here on KPR. It is just about 3 p.m. I'm Jeff Watson. I do apologize for that break from Howard Hanson's Romantic Symphony, which we were enjoying. It seems that the station was the victim of a brief power outage. Don't imagine that will happen during our broadcast of All Things Considered from NPR News, which is just ahead. Kansas Public Radio is KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, KANQ Chanute, and online at kansaspublicradio.org. It's 3 o'clock.
I can see why he wants it, because it provides immunity from audits that no other taxpayer could possibly get.
President Trump now says he may pull Todd Blanche's nomination for attorney general as two key Republicans withhold support.
For Thursday, July 30th, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Juana Summers.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The U.S. economy grew at an annual rate of 1.5% in the second quarter.
Even so, Americans continue to spend freely.
Consumers are spending at about a 2% growth rate. It's enough to keep the economy moving forward. It certainly could be better.
Also, artificial intelligence is transforming the world that young people will inherit.
Can teenagers come up with guidance for how schools should use AI?
Without that, it's just going to go unhinged. Everyone's going to stop learning and start relying on AI. Instead of using AI as a tool, they're going to use it as a brain.
Those stories and more after this news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump says he could withdraw Todd Blanche's nomination for U.S. Attorney General after two outgoing Republican senators, Texas's John Cornyn and North Carolina's Tom Tillis, withheld their support for Blanche, currently the acting AG. Their opposition stems from the settlement of Trump's lawsuit against the IRS. NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben has more.
Both senators wanted written guarantees regarding that settlement, which included a shield for Trump against tax audits, as well as nearly $1.8 billion for people claiming to have been targeted by the justice system. They said the DOJ wouldn't provide it. Trump posted on social media that he's prepared to pull Blanche's nomination until after Cornyn and Tillis leave office at the start of next year. He also boasted that he'd ended their careers. In response, Cornyn posted, quote, POTUS is mistaken if he believes concerns about the provisions in his tax lawsuit settlement are limited to me and Senator Tillis. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News, The White House.
The U.S. has retaliated against what it describes as Iran's surprise attack on Jordan. Central Command says ballistic missiles were fired this week against U.S. forces. Meanwhile, the war could be expanding in the region. A day after Saudi Arabia disclosed it was directly engaged, Egypt reported an unidentified drone strike near the Suez Canal. A Georgia man is getting 15 years in prison for giving his son the weapon used in the 2024 mass shooting that killed four people and injured nine others at Appalachee High School. On the eve of Appalachee High's first day of school, Judge Nicholas Prim essentially told Cole Gray's father, Colin Gray, at sentencing that he failed his son and failed the community.
But for you failing to get Colt help, but for your failure to remove access to the guns, this doesn't happen. September 4th would have been a normal day.
Gray's son, Colt, pleaded guilty to his crimes and will serve life in prison without parole. Hot and dry conditions are posing challenges for firefighters in Oregon as close to three dozen major wildfires are burning through rangelands and cattle country in the eastern half of the state. NPR's Kirk Sigler reports new fire weather watch advisories are posted.
The National Weather Service is warning thunderstorms could bring little or no rain, but lightning that could spark new fires. Most of the recent fires that have burned close to 1.5 million acres of land are believed to have ignited from lightning. Larry O'Neill is the state climatologist for Oregon.
So we're kind of holding our breath right now that the weather conditions can kind of try to moderate, although that's not looking likely.
There's only heat and wind in the immediate forecast, meaning dense smoke advisories will continue across the Northwest. O'Neill warns it could be a long summer fire season with the higher altitude forests in Oregon that have so far not burned remaining extremely dry. Kirk Sigler, NPR News.
U.S. stocks end the day higher with the Dow closing up 615 points. This is NPR. The Commerce Department finds the U.S. economy grew at an annual rate of 1.5% in the second quarter. That marks a slowdown from the 2.1% annual growth registered in the first 3 months of the year. Well, at the same time, a separate report also released today by the Commerce Department showed inflation remained fairly high in June, despite slowing somewhat from the month before. That report showed that inflation in June, as measured by the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, hit 3.7% from a year ago. The famous Cinerama Dome movie theater in Hollywood will be revived after closing during the coronavirus pandemic. NPR's Mandalit del Barco reports.
Cinephiles are excited about the Cinerama Dome's comeback. Sony says it will lease, restore, and reopen the widescreen geodesic-shaped theater in 2028, just in time to premiere a madcap movie shot in 70mm. Preservationists have tried to revive the theater that's been shuttered since the pandemic.
It seemed like it was just going to be a demolition by neglect, so I was like, something has to be done.
27-year-old filmmaker Ben Steinberg campaigned with rallies in an online petition, bringing he got attention by projecting images of the property's owners onto the Cinerama Dome itself, asking them to save it. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News, Los Angeles.
The Nasdaq is closed up more than 2.5%. The Dow and S&P also up roughly 1.5%. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working toward a healthy, resilient, secure world for all. On the web at theschmidt.org. This is NPR.
From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio. The forecast for northeast and east central Kansas, partly sunny skies for the remainder of this afternoon, a 50% chance of showers and storms, very humid, highs in the mid-80s. There's a 70% chance of showers and storms tonight, still going to be humid, with lows in the lower 70s. Tomorrow, more of the same, humid conditions, highs in the upper 80s, and a 40% chance of showers. It's 3:06.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Juana Summers. The fate of Todd Blanche's nomination for attorney general is in doubt. Two key Republicans are withholding their support for Blanche over concerns about the Justice Department's deal with President Trump to end his lawsuit against the IRS. Now, Trump says he's willing to temporarily withdraw Blanche's nomination. It is a rare stumbling block to one of the key positions in implementing the president's agency. NPR Justice Correspondent Ryan Lucas has been following and joins us now. Hey, Ryan.
Hi there.
So, Ryan, before we get to President Trump, tell us, what is the holdup in Blanche's nomination?
So, look, there are a lot of reasons that people have concerns about Blanche's attorney general. But the snag here in his confirmation process, it revolves around the deal that the Justice Department made to end President Trump's IRS lawsuit over his leaked tax returns. Remember, that agreement included the creation of a nearly $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund. Blanche has said that is not moving forward. But there was also a second related part that was a sweeping immunity deal for Trump, his family, and businesses from audits of past tax returns. That very much remains in effect. Two Republican senators, Texas's John Cornyn and North Carolina's Tom Tillis, they have concerns about this settlement. They want written guarantees from the Justice Department about it, in particular the scope of that tax immunity deal. But they say they haven't received the guarantees they're asking for. And so late last night, the Senate Judiciary Committee called off a vote that was planned for this morning on Blanche's nomination.
And of course, that brings us to today. And President Trump, what has he had to say?
Well, as he often does, the president posted on social media. He offered a lot of praise for Blanche, called him a star. And he also took a couple of swipes at Cornyn and Tillis. Trump mentioned that he refused to endorse either of them. He said their political careers may have been ended because of that. I will add that Trump endorsed Cornyn's primary challenger this year. That was a big blow to Cornyn's bid for another term. Cornyn is leaving Congress at the end of the year. Tillis did not run for re-election. He is retiring at the end of the year. So there's that internal GOP political dynamic to this. But on Blanche, Trump also said he could temporarily withdraw Blanche's nomination if Cornyn and Tillis don't drop their opposition. And Trump said that he would just put Blanche back up for consideration after the two lawmakers leave office. And as I mentioned a second ago, that would be at the end of the year.
I mean, as a former Capitol Hill reporter, I have to say, Ryan, I'm a little curious how well that would go over in Congress to resubmit the nomination.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I will say that the 10 other Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, they appear to support Blanche, but there's certainly an open question about the full Senate. On that point, Cornyn said on social media today that the president is mistaken if he thinks that Cornyn and Tillis are the only Republicans who are concerned about the settlement. And Cornyn said he doesn't know why the Justice Department won't just provide the assurances he's asking for. He was asked at one point yesterday whether Blanche and the Justice Department aren't providing the assurances he needs because the president doesn't want any changes to the immunity deal. Here's what Cornyn said.
I can see why he wants it, because it provides immunity from audits that no other taxpayer could possibly get.
And it's worth stating it clearly here that Trump would rather pull Blanche's nomination than provide the assurances about the tax immunity deal that benefits him, his family, and his businesses, a deal that, as Cornyn says there, no other taxpayer could possibly get.
Okay, so as far as Blanche goes, where do things go next?
So we have this standoff for now. The two sides are still talking. It's unclear, of course, whether they'll come to a solution that they can both agree on. We will ultimately see whether Trump follows through and temporarily pulls Blanche's nomination or not if this standoff drags on. Either way, though, for now, Blanche remains acting attorney general and, of course, very much in charge at the Justice Department.
NPR Justice Correspondent Ryan Lucas, thanks.
Thank you.
Over the course of one frantic weekend this summer, 98 teenagers representing all 50 states met in Boston to try to do something quite ambitious. They wanted to agree on one unified national policy to help schools navigate the chaos created by artificial intelligence. NPR's Corey Turner has their story.
These teens, most of them high school juniors and seniors, came from big cities and small towns, blue states and red states, and they had at least one thing in common. When it comes to AI, they want guardrails.
Without that, it's just going to go unhinged. Everyone's going to stop learning and start relying on AI. Instead of using AI as a tool, they're going to use it as a brain.
Campbell McHenry goes to school in Mississippi, and he's talking here about what researchers call cognitive offloading. I asked a lot of the teens about this.
And is that something that you guys have seen? That there are plenty of kids who are just looking to get through an assignment?
Oh, yeah.
I'm friends with most of them.
Got assignments that people just go, yeah, as soon as I get home, I'm just putting this whole thing into ChatGPT.
And that's partly why Colton Larson of Idaho and Vivian Dodd of Wyoming came to Boston to be a part of this mock Senate to craft an AI policy that teens and schools can agree on.
I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend.
The weekend began at the Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the United States Senate. In a replica of the Senate chamber, the students stood at their desks, taking the oath of office.
So help me God. With that, you may be seated. Give yourselves a round of applause. Welcome to the United States Senate.
This teen Senate was handpicked by their school leaders, and the event was co-sponsored by several nonprofits, including the Institute, plus AASA, the School Superintendents Association, and Day of AI, a nonprofit launched out of MIT's RAISE, AI Literacy Initiative.
Your charge is pretty simple. This is an opportunity for you to tell us what you think.
The students were reminded whatever they come up with wouldn't become real law. After all, they're not real senators. But if they could agree, their bill would be sent to AASA's network of some 10,000 school leaders across the country, many of whom are right now crafting their own local AI policies in the absence of national regulation.
The adults themselves haven't been able to come to consensus on this.
Jeffrey Riley is executive director of Day of AI.
Now it falls to the kids. Let them lead the way. I think they recognize that AI is a powerful technology with some really positives, but I think they recognize there's some negatives as well.
After being sworn in, the students were then divided into subcommittees to turn a laundry list of proposed ideas into one coherent bill.
The first thing in the writing is states shall require schools to provide AI literacy when students first start utilizing technology in the classroom.
Arkansas's Danielle Robertson and her team all agreed that schools should be required to teach students about AI and how to use it responsibly, including plagiarism, data privacy, and understanding that chatbots are designed to tell you what you want to hear. But how early should that teaching start? Elijah Martinez, representing New Mexico, argued, the earlier the better.